The following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
Giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMSI.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Humanity First. My name is Peter Evers, and I work at BAMSI. And BAMSI is an organization that provides many services in and around the Brockton area. Today, we're going to be talking about health equity. A couple of weeks ago, we had a presentation and a panel at Bridgewater University, where we explored with a couple of BAMSI employees and also with Caitlin Ferreira, who is the Health Equity Program Manager at South Coast Health. Why is it that health outcomes are different for people in different areas? It is true that it is more likely that your health outcomes are determined by the zip code you live in than, you know, your genetic predisposition to health outcomes, which is extraordinary and does tell a story of inequity in this country. We talk about many of the solutions for this, and it's one of the more complicated things. People have very strong opinions about the healthcare service that we have in America, and there are some extreme paradoxes. That is, that the best research often comes out of this country and that is given to the world, and the best medicines from this country and the best treatments, and yet not everybody gets it. And that's what we're going to talk today about in the second segment when Caitlin comes on, because she is an expert about this. And we're going to talk about why your zip code is important in your health outcomes over a lifetime. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm an essential worker here at BAMSI, and I'm a nurse. Nurses are essential here at BAMSI because as nurses, we really have the opportunity to make an impact. We have very small ratios, so we have the opportunity to really learn everything about the person served and be able to give the best care. It really serves such a great purpose for me as being a nurse and really why I came into nursing. Learn more about nursing opportunities at BAMSIjobs.org.
Giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMSI.
And welcome back, everybody, to Humanity First. And as promised a couple of minutes ago, we have Caitlin Ferreira, who is from South Coast Health, and she is the Health Equity Program Manager over there. And Caitlin, welcome, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
And we had a great time a couple of weeks ago. I was just explaining that we had a health disparities conversation and a panel up at Bridgewater State University. And the conversation was excellent, I thought, because there were some very broad topics here about why it is not true that health care is evenly distributed and health outcomes are not evenly distributed across this country, even in this state. And then we also had some conversations about what happens locally. And so today I'd like to focus on both of those things, but maybe begin by asking you this question. And I led with this statement that oftentimes health outcomes are determined more by the zip code that you live in than your predisposition to health over a lifetime. Let me begin by asking you, and also anything you want to say about the work that you do, but let's get to right into that. What is that a true statement about zip code and health outcomes?
Absolutely. That's certainly a true statement. We know that many social factors can affect our health outcomes, and we often refer to social drivers of health, which we can talk about more. But where we live is one of the major factors that affects things like our life expectancy and many other health outcomes. And just to back up a bit regarding the work that I do within the health equity space, my job is to look for patterns like that. by zip code, certainly, and also by metrics like race and ethnicity to see where gaps lie. We know that health outcomes are not the same for everyone, and that the health system we have right now doesn't work the same for everyone. So it's our job to find those gaps as health systems and work to close them. And zip code is certainly something that we look at often.
As we look at the social determinants of health, and I, you know, I'm always struck by the fact that it isn't the time you spend in your doctor's office, right, for your annual physical, which, by the way, I had last week, and I'm always a little bit amused when my doctor says, no trouble with alcohol, right, couple of drinks a week, and a closed question, which suggests perhaps that there isn't a great deal of interest in asking a question that might have a negative outcome. And you know, oftentimes those annual physicals are cursory, but it really is what you go back to in your neighborhood that really affects your outcomes. Why is this important, do you think?
So a few reasons. One, I think those conversations that you're having in the doctor's office, those might be different conversations based on how you walk into the doctor's office, right? We all have implicit biases. And I think many folks who work in healthcare are here because, you know, we care for patients. Many physicians are excited to take care of their patients. But someone might make an assumption that, you know, here's this person walking in. Certainly they don't have this health issue, or certainly they do. And the way that those questions are asked is something that, you know, we try to take a reflective look on to make sure that we're meeting patients where they're at and not making those assumptions, so that the door is open if you, for example, did have an issue that you wanted to speak to your doctor about. And then when you walk out that door, as you said, Peter, that affects your health more than anything that happens in the clinic, right? And the social drivers of health, the conditions that we live in within our communities, in terms of food access, in terms of neighborhood safety, access to economic opportunity, jobs, education, those things profoundly impact our health. And I think as health systems, we have responsibility really for both of those, right? What happens when you come to see us, right? That should be as equitable an experience as possible. And we've certainly done a lot of work on that here at South Coast. But also, how can we reach beyond that? How can we form partnerships with community organizations? How can we bring healthcare to community members to help decrease barriers like transportation and comfort even within healthcare settings? There's a really long and complex history of how healthcare is interacted with communities. And it's up to us as systems within the current context to break down those barriers as much as possible. And it's hard work. It's work we do every day, but more and more systems really need to continue making that commitment to move the needle.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I'm really interested in is what a country or what a state or a hospital system spends on prevention versus what they spend on acute care. And when I was looking, doing a little bit of research for the panel discussion, you know, I discovered that health outcomes for countries and cultures are much improved if a system is spending money on preventative care. Why don't we do so much of that in this country?
Great question. And you know, we had a great discussion even before that panel started, Peter. Work by Elizabeth Bradley and others has really done a lot to highlight that at the national level. We in the United States spend a lot compared to our peer nations on healthcare, kind of narrowly defined healthcare. And we don't have a lot to show for it in terms of outcomes and even some metrics like patient satisfaction and certainly many metrics of health equity. And when you look at healthcare expenditures and then you stack on social spending, which can include some things that might be considered preventive healthcare, but also things like education and other kind of social factors that affect the way we walk in the world, you can see why we're so behind. We have fantastic innovation in the healthcare space in the United States, but we often have a coordination problem, right? We have really great, intense healthcare when that's what you need, but our system can be very fragmented. And I think individual systems can do a lot to close those gaps. We certainly have, you know, integrated care management programs, patient-centered medical homes, but at the national level, we see this continued issue that systems and even states are having to fill in the gaps for it. And Massachusetts has certainly done a lot. There's a very robust health equity program through MassHealth currently that pays a lot of attention to how these outcomes are patterned by things like race and ethnicity. But at the national level, there's a lot of work to do to get the kind of coordination that we would need to see to move that needle.
Yeah, I mean, I remember during the Clinton administration, Janet Reno actually said, we really need to have a health policy nationally. And I think that was the last time it was mentioned. So that what's that 30 something years ago? I think, you know, just sort of honing in on Brockton, for instance, because Brockton is a great example of a gateway city, of a city so important to this country, as and there's so many of them where new Americans come and begin their journey. A place where people can afford to get on the property ladder, although I would debate that nowadays, given what has happened with the housing market over the last few years. Why aren't people getting a good shake in Brockton? Now, I know, I will say, over the last 2 years, there's been all sorts of things that have happened. You know, we've got the explosion that happened at Signature Hospital. And then, of course, you can't have a day without Stuart Healthcare being in the news. And that is something that is under the microscope at the moment. But it goes further back than that, doesn't it? How health outcomes in Brockton are not as good as they are in Easton, for instance, and they're back to back. Our health outcomes in Roxbury, I worked for 25 years in Roxbury, in the shadow of some of the greatest hospitals in the world, literally in the world. And yet infant mortality is higher than some third world countries within that zip code. Why? Well, actually, let me ask you this, Caitlin. What is the solution? You mentioned some of the initiatives, some of the health equity initiatives, but let me throw this at you. Is it the for-profit influence that people have in Congress? Is it insurance companies? What is it that prevents us from being much more broad thinking about how we provide equity to people in this country?
Yeah, so I'll first just underscore what you shared. We can see differences at the most microscopic levels of our geography, at the census tract levels, these groups of, you know, about 4,000 people from kind of block to block, we can see these differences. And an example I find striking, a mile and a half apart in Brockton and in Whitman, we see a 7-year difference in life expectancy. Wow. Right, two wow. communities that you can get to in a very short amount of time, just a mile and a half apart. And fragmentation like that, they might have similar hospital access in terms of proximity, right? So that certainly is a factor. Hospital closures can profoundly impact a community, and that access is incredibly important. But as we discussed earlier, it's also what happens when you're outside of that healthcare space that really affects the way that, you know, outcomes like life expectancy are experienced by a community. So to answer your question, I think fragmentation is one of the barriers that we're experiencing. And to resolve issues like this, health systems really need to go beyond their walls and meet with community partners, come to the table, meet patients where they're at, but also meet community organizations where we're at. We have a community health and wellness team here. We work very closely with local health departments. I know many folks do, but I think continued incentive for hospital systems and health systems to break down those barriers is absolutely needed. And we are seeing that in Massachusetts a bit at the policy level. I spoke briefly about the MassHealth equity incentive programs. That really is changing the landscape in terms of how hospitals and health systems think about their mission. Suddenly, we have folks at the state level here in Massachusetts saying, hey, let's figure out what disparities you're seeing in your community, folks that are accessing your hospitals, and let's work to address those. And I think, you know, as we begin to dive into that work, this is year two of that 1115 waiver program. Yeah. that we're in now, we're going to see an increased need for community partnerships. That is not going to be a difference we're going to be able to make with changes inside our walls alone. So I think and hope that we'll see increased opportunity for that and for us to think differently about the role of health systems in our communities. Certainly, we need to first and foremost provide excellent patient care, but we also need to be good neighbors. And we are large institutions within our community. So the more we can break down those barriers and hold space for our community partners, bring them to the table and really take their lead in addressing issues that they know the most about, things like infant mortality, for example. Health systems certainly are well equipped to make a difference in that, but so are organizations that have community doulas. And we all really need to be at the table together thinking about how to break down those barriers.
I love that example because it speaks to the network of professional care. And we tend to think about health through a very narrow lens of intervention. And it really goes, we talk about the differences. We look at other countries, you know, I think we spend 20% of our gross national product on healthcare, and we're 32nd in the world in outcomes. You know, you look at, I'll give Britain for an example. And by the way, it is not a perfect health system by a long time. It is a single payer health system, but it has been neglected for years and years. And yet, it's 12th in the world, and it spends a fraction, as you said before, on that. So there's something to be looked at there. But I often think about population health as maybe the solution to this. When we think about our healthcare interventions in this country, you think about an illness rather than the whole person. You know, we treat by encounter, don't we, in this country for the most part. If you have a broken leg, you come in, you get the broken leg fixed. Or if you have, you know, if you have diabetes, you get a medicine for that. Rather than having a conversation about what is it that causes type 2 diabetes, it's about lifestyle. It's about making better choices and having the ability to not live in a food desert, for instance. And so we're going back and back and back, and we're looking at the population, the health of the population, as opposed to the diseases of the population. Do you see that as a major? I mean, I know a lot of the 1115 waiver stuff that you're talking about is related and sort of hatched in that idea of the health of a community rather than the illness of an individual.
Yes, absolutely. I think population health is a really important reframing for this. And when we're talking about community-based health systems, for example, we are seeing those issues that are, you know, the experience of patients is reflected in the experience of our providers. Those are the same folks coming into our emergency departments and really having negative experiences of managing a chronic disease that may have been preventable. So what population health can do and value-based care in particular can do is reframe things so that everyone's kind of on the same team with a more coordinated approach. We want patients and providers and whoever is paying for healthcare in the model we have, right, our payers, to be on the same team and say, hey, you know, you don't want to have a negative health outcome. None of us want you to either. How can we prioritize as wisely as possible? And that requires a lot of coordination. We have a couple of accountable care organizations within South Coast, and I think one of the best ways that comes across from a patient experience is that coordination. You know that, you know, if you have an encounter because of a health issue you're facing, you will get the follow-up care you need. You'll have someone to talk to. You'll find out what your next steps are and how you can pursue better health in the future. And without that, it is a really complex system to navigate, as you noted. You know, we have especially newcomers to our communities navigating this healthcare system. It's a lot to figure out. So the more coordinated we can be, the better we can meet folks where they're at without having to kind of weave their way through a system that wastes a lot of resources without improving those outcomes. So population health, I think, is absolutely integral as an approach to resolving this.
Yeah. And we're sadly out of time. And I think we've just begun a conversation, Caitlin, so hopefully you'll come back. But, you know, I will say on the optimistic side, I came to this country 30 something years ago, and we've always been great planners. So we didn't have a home. We didn't have a job and we were pregnant. And I remember arriving in Boston and trying to sign up for health insurance. And pregnancy was deemed a pre-existing condition, which I thought was rather interesting. We've come a long way since then.
Sure
I
has.
Think we've got a long way to go. And I think even having someone like you in that position who is looking at these trends and looking at equity and thinking about inclusivity is just such a step in the right direction. So Kelly, thank you so much for coming on and enlightening us. And hopefully we can do this again in a few months because there's so much more to talk about.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter. I totally agree. I think we have a lot of momentum in the right direction and I'm excited to see how much further we come. It's great to talk to you.
You too. Take care. Goodbye, everybody.